out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Friday the 15th of February 2019 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioarian.com. Well, the big news over here in Britain at the moment is all about a jihadi bride, a girl that ran away to join the Islamic State with three other girls when she was 15. She was a schoolgirl at the time, and she went off to give support to the terrorist organization. She went over there to become a jihadi bride. These Muslim fighters expect to be given brides, and it's part of Islam that women should offer their services to them. And this is besides the idea that they can marry somebody for a night and divorce them the next day. Although that is part of it. There were women going over there to do that and provide their services to these fighters that they saw as brave Islamic fighters trying to implement an Islamic State. And we already have Islamic States, obviously. We have Saudi Arabia, that's an Islamic State. We have the Islamic Republic of Iran, that's an Islamic State. They're all based upon Sharia law. They all include beheadings, floggings, throwing people off buildings. In Saudi Arabia, we have treaties with, we do deals with Saudi Arabia. And Saudi Arabia were the main sponsors of this Islamic State that they wanted to impose on Syria. And the whole point of having a state is that you have citizens. And when this girl went over and married this jihadi, she became a citizen of the Islamic State. She was no longer a citizen of Britain. Besides the fact that she had joined the enemy who we were fighting against, so she was a traitor, she renounced her citizenship by marrying him. The same as when Africans and Arabs and all the dross of the third world set foot on British soil and claim asylum, they get given citizenship. They get told, oh, you're a citizen of Britain now. We're responsible for you. We'll take care of all your needs, all your welfare needs, education needs, health needs. We'll go out and rescue you if you get caught drug dealing in a foreign country. Or break any other crimes, we'll come and sort that out for you. And that's the responsibility of the Islamic State for their citizens. It's not the responsibility of the British state. This girl has nothing to do with Britain anymore. She's a citizen of a failed state. Therefore, it's the failed state's responsibility to look after her. Since the failed state is no more, it's the responsibility of the refugee camp to look after her and whatever laws there are, whatever help can be given to her there. And if she makes her way to Britain, she should be just treated as a traitor. She should be sent back. She's got no claims for asylum over here. It's absolutely disgusting. This girl is quite open about the fact that she just wants to come back to Britain for the benefits. She even says that. She says she just wants to come back for her child. She's lost two children over there. She's got a third one. She wants that one to be given British citizenship and be born in Britain so that she has an anchor baby, so that the child will get care on the NHS, so that she will get all the welfare benefits. She's quite open about that. She's quite honest. Now, that's the only thing you can say about her is that she's honest. She was asked whether she saw any of the atrocities, and she said, well, I saw decapitated heads in the bin. She was asked how she felt about that. She said, well, it didn't faze me. She was being quite honest. People are shocked at that. Negroes have a tradition of eating other human beings. Of course, they're not going to be fazed by seeing heads in a basket. And you can't say that this is a cultural thing, and that because these people have been in British culture, they're going to be shocked at seeing that. That's just not true, because look at all the Muslims that went off to go and fight for ISIS, that carried out all these hideous atrocities, and the majority of them had been in European countries for decades. Apparently, they were British citizens. They were French citizens. And yet they still weren't shocked by these atrocities. Of course they're not shocked by it. It's the same atrocities that we see happening in Saudi Arabia. It's a cultural thing. It's the same as we see happening in Africa. So she's just being honest there. And of course we've now got the liberals over here that are saying she should be allowed back. If this poor girl was brainwashed. She was brainwashed. That's why she wasn't shocked at seeing heads in a basket. No. Her instincts told her not to be shocked at seeing heads in a basket. And it's not just her either. There's a lot more. This report I've got on it comes from the Daily Mail. Britain could be forced to take back a runaway Islamic State schoolgirl. No, she's not a schoolgirl. She's been a mother three times now. Three times this female has been a mother, and they're still calling her a schoolgirl. Just the same as they call the Boko Haram sex slaves schoolgirls. I mean, some of them are probably grandparents by now. They were all taken as wives, those girls that were taken in Nigeria. They were kidnapped by Boko Haram so that they could then be made into wives for the Muslims, because that's an Islamic tradition. It says you can do that in the Quran. You can do that to the kuffar. So they're still calling her a schoolgirl when she's not. They say Britain could be forced to take her back, and dozens of other jihadi brides fleeing the collapsing caliphate. Ministers yesterday vowed not to risk UK lives to rescue pregnant teenager Shamima Begum, who is begging to come home despite having no regrets about her 4 years in Syria. Well, isn't that brave and courageous of the British government to put their foot down and say, well, we're not going to go over there and rescue her. They shouldn't be allowing her into the country at all. They shouldn't even be considering going over there to get someone who was a member of an enemy state. Home Secretary Sajid Javid said last night he would use all available powers to prevent Begum from returning to the UK, while security sources told The Times she would be treated as a national security threat if she returned to British soil. But if Begum makes it across the borders to a British consulate, officials will have little choice but to allow her home so that the NHS can care for her baby. So it's nonsense what Sajid Javid is saying. They're not going to prevent her from coming back at all. They're just it's just a lot of bluster. The Mail understands dozens more jihadi brides are poised to come back to Britain as their medieval caliphate is crushed. It's amazing that, you know, they'll call ISIS medieval, but they won't call Saudi Arabia medieval or Sharia law medieval. It's worse than medieval. We didn't used to chop people's hands off for stealing. We used to send them to Australia. Look at the amazing things the white people actually did that were the dregs of society that were sent off to places like Australia. They built an amazing civilization over there, because they had the white genes, they had the ability to do that. Calling Islam medieval is really an insult to medieval Europe, which in many ways was much better than the world that we live in today. Begum was just 15 when she and two other pupils from Bethnal Green Academy in London flew to Syria in 2015 to marry ISIS fighters. And again, this is interesting. How did she manage to get on a plane at the age of 15, unaccompanied? How come she wasn't asked any questions? Could it be because She was dressed up as a Muslim, and they don't dare investigate Muslims and do too many checks upon them because they would be accused of being Islamophobic. I don't think they check any Muslims when they get on planes. They only seem to be checking white people. Do they ask them to take their burqa off? Of course they don't. This week she shocked the world again by showing up at a refugee camp in Syria, having fled the terror group's final battle. The teenager declared no remorse whatsoever, but revealed her two first children had died, and she was terrified of the conditions in the camp. She desperately wants NHS help with her third baby, which is due any day now. So she's quite open. She just wants the benefits of Britain. She has no remorse about what she's done at all. And why should she? She's a Muslim. She just went off to join up with a Muslim group. She's just a devout Muslim, basically. Not one of these progressive liberal types that we keep being told is the real Islam, but that only exists in a minority of people in Britain, not actually in the Islamic world. Mr. Javid said, "We must remember that those who left Britain to join ISIS were full of hate for our country. My message is clear. If you have supported terrorist organisations abroad, I will not hesitate to prevent your return." He told The Times, "But if you do manage to return, you should be ready to be questioned, investigated, and potentially prosecuted." What prosecution are they going to give to her? What evidence are they going to have of her carrying out any crimes? They aren't. The thing is, she joined another state. She doesn't have the rights of a British citizen anymore. And he's saying here she may be potentially prosecuted. Probably not, because she'll be a young mother by that time. So they'll just give her a council house, and she'll claim that she was brainwashed. And the liberals will say, well, the proof of her brainwashing is that she wasn't fazed by seeing heads in a basket. That's the sort of circular logic that we get when we are faced with the facts of the differences between the races, especially around subjects of violence. In an extraordinary interview, Begum told Anthony Lloyd, a correspondent for The Times who found her in the Al Hol refugee camp, that, "I don't regret coming to Syria." She added, "When I saw my first severed head in a bin, it didn't faze me at all. It was from a captured fighter on the battlefield, an enemy of Islam." And what's an enemy of Islam? Anyone that's not a Muslim. Anyone that is not a Muslim is seen as an enemy of Islam. They're seen as a potential convert. If they haven't converted upon hearing about Islam, then they are an enemy of Islam. They have no worth. They are just potential slaves for Muslims to use. Begum said that as of 2 weeks ago, her Bethnal Green classmates, Amira Abazi and Sharmina Begum, were alive, but both had chosen to stay in the town of Baghouz, where ISIS is being crushed by Kurdish-backed Syrian forces. A fourth girl, Khadija Sultana, was reportedly killed in 2016. Shamima Begum's brother-in-law, Mohammed Rehman, said, "The family spoke with Shamima. It was very emotional. Shamima's mother broke down when she heard her voice. We didn't know if she was alive or not." So you can imagine this has come as a shock to us all. And no, this isn't a shock to them. Again, she didn't contact her family for 3 years. That is not uncommon in non-whites. They don't, especially blacks, they don't have the same familial ties that we have. I mean, even blacks like Barack Obama had never seen his family in years. He's got family out in Kenya that haven't seen him for decades, that they're not surprised about, because that's just the African way. They don't have the familial ties that we do. This is why they sold each other into slavery. Blacks would sell their own children into slavery. And because we have different familial ties in the West, they will play upon that. Like this mother is here, claiming that she's still got motherly feelings for this girl, saying she didn't know if she was alive or not. This was such a shock. She's just playing on the fact that that's how white people would feel. She says, "We want her to come back so that she can be re-educated. Re-educated? She was the one that educated her in the first place. Her father was an Islamic activist. He was one of the ones shouting, "British troops go to hell," and all the rest of it. And he's saying that she should come back. And he doesn't think his actions had any effect on her. And this is something different to Islam. It's not. They know it isn't. But they just go along with this crazy liberal British government idea that this isn't actually Islam. She says, "I can understand why people in this country are angry and don't want her back, but we are appealing for compassion and understanding on her behalf. Mr. Riemann told the Times that Begum's reluctance to denounce ISIS may be the result of Stockholm Syndrome, where kidnap victims adopt the views of their abductors. He said, she has been there for so long, maybe the only way to make it through was to keep supporting the ideology." Well, hang on a minute. Didn't she support this ideology before she went? Before she was being held there? She wasn't kidnapped. She went of her own free will. She stayed there of her own free will. She wasn't being kept by captors, by abductors, like he is saying. And again, he's just playing on European ideas. So the whole idea of Stockholm Syndrome is a European idea. We know that it affects Europeans. Why should that mean that it affects the other races in the same way? Mohammed Uddin, the father of Sharmina Begum, said the girls should be forgiven because they were radicalized and brainwashed. Abazi's father, Hussein Abazi, said, "They are no threat to us." How does he know that they are no threat to us? They went out there to marry the jihadis, to support the jihadis, whose stated goal is to kill the kafir and create an Islamic state. And they still believe that. So any time this happens again, any time there are jihadis wanting to carry out terrorism in Britain, they're going to be supporting them if they come back over here. Tasnimi Akunji, a lawyer for the girls' families, said they were victims. He added, "I'm grateful she's still alive, but she remains in danger." She's not a victim. She's a Muslim. She's a supporter of Islam. There's nothing in what she has said that makes you think that she is a victim in any way. Again, it's this liberal, crazy liberal mindset that thinks of her as a victim. She was the one supporting the victimizers. Dr. Kim Howells, a former counter-terrorism minister, said, "She sounds completely unrepentant. She sounds cynical. She said she wasn't fazed by the sight of those heads in a bin, as she described it. And now she wants to take advantage of the NHS. You can bet your bottom dollar there will be a lobby to get this girl home on humanitarian grounds." And that's quite accurate. Funny how it's always former ministers that actually speak any common sense. The ones that are actually in office never do. Sir Peter Fahey, former Chief Constable of Greater Manchester Police, said Begum could become some sort of lightning rod for both Islamic and far-right extremists. Of course, they have to bring in this idea that somehow the far-right are some kind of threat, and that there is a correlation between the two. This is one of the big lies that they try to push. The far right is just as much of a threat as Islamists that blow themselves up, behead people, throw people off buildings, set fire to non-Muslims, and try to take over Syria and Libya. I mean, how you can draw a comparison between that and Tommy Robinson exposing crimes against the British people, I just don't know. And nobody falls for it. Nobody falls for it. Yet they still repeat it. Sources said there were dozens of British women and their brats living in the camps spread across Syria. Mr. Wallace vowed that no diplomats would risk their lives to go and rescue Begum, but admitted she is eligible for consular assistance if she makes it to a country where there is that, such as Turkey or Iraq. So the likelihood is that she will do that. Now she's been told that she can do that, and she'll come back. How can she do this when she's no longer a British citizen? The Prime Minister's spokesman said those who went to Syria must be in no doubt that they will be questioned, investigated, and potentially prosecuted on their return. So they're still going to accept them back. And don't forget, this is a country that doesn't allow people like Lauren Southern or Brittany Pettibone into the country because of might upset the community. So they don't want white people in the country, but they will accept back jihadi terrorists and jihadi terrorist wives. We already have jihadi terrorists back on our soil that are apparently are just being watched. So that means that they're safe, of course. Never mind the fact that so many of the atrocities that have been carried out by Muslims that have actually been on the watch list. It never actually seems to prevent any terrorist attacks. Well, the next news story that I've got today concerns a different subject, homosexuality. And this is confirmation of everything that we say about homosexuality being linked to pedophilia. When homosexuality occurs in the general population, we are told to celebrate it. Any celebrity that comes out and says that they enjoy anal sex, we're told they're very courageous, very brave, what wonderful people they are. When a Catholic priest engages in it, then we're told that it's pedophilia, and somehow it's wrong when the Catholic priests are doing it. So we have these two opposing views of homosexuality. It's called pedophilia when it's in the Catholic Church, and when it happens outside the Catholic Church, then it's a wonderful thing that should be celebrated. And this report comes from Belgium. A new report on clerical sex abuse in Belgium has revealed that 76% of the priests' victims were male, echoing patterns of chiefly homosexual abuse in other countries. And don't forget, the actual percentage of homosexuals in the population is only 1.7%. Now, for this program, I looked it up to find out what was the current percentage. Wikipedia is telling us that it's actually 6%, and it's increasing all the time, and how wonderful that is. And that was from a survey of 1,000 people. But when you look at the annual population survey of 2017, which collects information on self-perceived sexual identity from people aged 16 and over, we find that it's only 1.7% of males and 0.7% of females. So the amount of males that should have been, all males involved in this, should have been, there should have only been about 1% of the priests that were actually homosexual, and yet 76% of the victims were males. So 76% of the attackers, I guess you could say, were homosexual. And this is the same pattern that's followed everywhere else. And in actual fact, if we look at other statistics, this comes from Frightening Gay Statistics, and they say, although homosexuals account for less than 2% of the population, that's obviously remained steady because this was written a decade or so back, they constitute about a third of all child molesters. And that is borne out by just about every study that's ever been done upon it. I mean, there's a raft of citations for this. And I've always said that they're about 30 times more likely to be child molesters than straight people. And I base that on the prison figures, where if you look at the amount of pedophiles that there are in prison, you will find that 30%, 35% of them were homosexual. So you could say, well, if they only make up 1% of the general population, yet they make up 35% of all the pedophiles in prison, then they're 35 times more likely to be a child molester than a straight man is. And this is the reason why you cannot legalize homosexuality and tolerate homosexuality, is because it increases the number of children that are molested. And the result of the molestation in a lot of cases is that the victims go on to then become homosexuals themselves. So instead of preventing the molestation of children, what we have done is we've legalized the results of the child molestation. And because we've legalized the results of it, we've increased the chances of it happening. I mean, we are now at record levels of children that are being sexually abused. And as it says, as the figures show, a third of all the abusers are actually homosexual. A study of Canadian pedophiles has shown that 30% of those studied admitted to having engaged in homosexual acts as adults, and 91% of the molesters of non-familial boys admitted to no lifetime sexual contact other than homosexual. So 30% of pedophiles admit to being homosexual, and 91% of pedophiles that didn't actually abuse their own family admit to for their entire lives being homosexual. There is this link between the two. That's why it can't be tolerated. That's why you can't have these pride parades. Besides the fact that they also form a homosexual mafia, and if you get homosexuals in one area or in one job, they will ensure that all the other new people that get taken on will also be homosexual. I mean, the British government boasts that it has the most number of homosexuals in it out of any government in the world. I would really like to find the actual percentage, because it should be no more than 1.7%. And if it's not, then it proves the theories of the gay mafia. And what's happening in the church, that proves the theory of the gay mafia. It's not a false conspiracy theory. They recognize one another, and they do favors for one another, the same as the Freemasons do. Now, this article continues. Brussels Cardinal Joseph de Keyzel presented the 400-page report on clerical sexual abuse on Tuesday, which documents accusations of abuse from 1,054 alleged victims since 2010, three-quarters of whom were male, and 73% between the ages of 10 and 18 years. So, of course, we're being told that this is a pedophile problem within the Catholic Church, and we all think that that means prepubescent children, but it doesn't. It means adolescent boys. And if you look at homosexual magazines, they have a disturbing preoccupation with adolescent boys. Again, this is borne out by all the studies. The ideal partner for a homosexual male will always be a young boy between the ages of 13 and 15. The innocence, they wish to take that innocence away, the same as the innocence was taken away from them. Of the 426 cases that were reported, 92% go back more than 28 years. The majority of cases of clerical sexual abuse allegedly took place in Catholic schools or in rectories, according to the report. And this is also going on in the seminaries as well. The older teenagers that wish to be priests, they go to these seminaries and they discover that a lot of the teachers, particularly the Jesuit ones, are homosexual, and they come on to them. And a lot of the time, these boys, they're celibate, or they in the past, people would join the church to remain celibate because they would be fighting against these feelings, and they didn't want to the temptation. They didn't want to be homosexual. And now you go to a seminary and you'll find that because homosexuality has been legalized and there is this gay mafia within the church, that then they're put into temptation. Instead of it being a place where they can get away from temptation, it's a place that is just seething with sodomy. And it's all covered up. A team of researchers led by Professor Emeritus of Psychology Manu Kirzi from Leuven contributed to the report, which has been released just prior to a major international meeting in the Vatican to address the problem of sexual abuse. In presenting the report, Cardinal Kessel said that hundreds of victims of sexual abuse finally had the courage to talk about their abuse, and that now it is important to acknowledge the suffering of the victims as well as their forced silence. As Professor Kirzi noted in the preface to the report, sexual abuse or abusive behaviour is not a disease. It is a crime. It is an abuse of power. And of course, we're told today that homosexuality, they're just born like it. The Belgium report mirrors a study released last September by a sexual abuse commission from Germany, showing more than 3,500 cases of mostly male minors who were victims of clerical sexual abuse between 1946 and 2014. And if they weren't homosexual pedophiles, you would find that it was roughly the same numbers of girls as it was boys. And it's not. It's all boys. Last fall, the Vatican's former doctrinal chief, Cardinal Gerhard Müller, said it was imperative to acknowledge the ties between homosexually active priests and the child sexual abuse crisis, something he said many church leaders have failed to do, because of course it's not politically correct to link the two. That McCarrick, together with his clan and a homosexual network, was able to wreak havoc in a mafia-like manner in the church is connected with the underestimation of the moral depravity of homosexual acts among adults, said the cardinal, in reference to Archbishop Theodore McCarrick, who has been accused of serial homosexual abuse. Part of the present crisis is that people do not wish to see the true causes and cover them up with the help of propaganda phrases from the homosexual lobby, the cardinal said. Last August, a former papal nuncio to the United States came to a similar conclusion in an 11-page report. Vatican whistleblower Archbishop Carlo Maria Vigiano alleged that an extensive homosexual network among bishops and priests was the root cause of the sex abuse crisis, as well as the cover-ups by the bishops. These homosexual networks, which are now widespread in many dioceses, seminaries, and religious orders, act under the concealment of secrecy and lies, he stated, and they strangle innocent victims and priestly vocations and are strangling the entire church. Vigiano claimed that former Vatican Secretary of State's Cardinal Tarcisio Bartone had insistently presented candidates known to be active homosexuals to be ordained as bishops, and also claimed that two important Francis appointees, Cardinal Francesco Coccopalmerio and Archbishop Vincenzo Paglia, belonged to the homosexual current in favour of subverting Catholic doctrine on homosexuality. On October the 19th, Archbishop Vigiano released another statement in which he reiterated his belief that a crisis of homosexuality is at the root of the Church's current scandals. McCarrick was part of a network of bishops promoting homosexuality who, exploiting their favour with Pope Francis, manipulated episcopal appointments so as to protect themselves from justice and to strengthen the homosexual network in the hierarchy and in the church at large, he wrote. Everything Himmler said about homosexuals doing this is being proved true. Once again, according to Vigiano, the underlying reason why there are so many victims of clerical sex abuse is the corrupting influence of homosexuality in the priesthood and in the hierarchy. This very grave crisis cannot be properly addressed and resolved unless and until we call things by their proper names, he said. This is a crisis due to the scourge of homosexuality in its agents, in its motives, and in its resistance to reform. It is no exaggeration to say that homosexuality has become a plague in the clergy, and it can only be eradicated with spiritual weapons, he said. It is an enormous hypocrisy to condemn the abuse, to claim to weep for the victims, and yet to refuse to denounce the root cause of so much sexual abuse, which is homosexuality. It is well established that homosexual predators exploit clerical privilege to their advantage, he said. But to claim the crisis itself to be clericalism is pure sophistry. And that's exactly what the mainstream media does. It claims that this is something to do with Catholicism, child abuse is rampant in the Catholic Church, and it's not. It's homosexuality and homosexuality's links with the abuse of young boys. That's what it is. And until we can name it as what it is, which they refuse to do, it will continue to be a problem. And once again, it's only the alternative media that is speaking about this. This should be headline news, but it's not. You'll only find it in the alternative media. That report was actually from Breitbart. Anyway, thank you very much for listening today. I will be back on Monday with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.